to tell him.
Let me interrupt you. Would you like a little liquor or something?
Oh, no.
Or some candy?
No, sure.
I always keep a snack for you.
No, we're fine. What we really would like is to have you tell us about the World Federalist and how you became interested.
It's interesting. Very.
Sure it is.
Do you remember Norman Cousins was the editor of the Saturday Review? And I thought he was so bright. And he was young. And there were two lines in the paper. Norman Cousins is going to speak tonight at the Carnegie Lecture Hall. Not the music lecture. And I said, this is my chance. I'm going. When I got down there, I think counting me, there might have been 20 people, you know. And I always remember Norman Cousins said, would you all mind if I sat on the desk? I'm so tired. And I was really impressed. So a little me, I get up and say, if Mary Doe would like to join the World Federalist, how would she go about it? That's all I said. Mac Lane and Elizabeth Block, who's quite a person, as you know, met me at the door when I was going out to nail me down. You know, they don't often get somebody asked how to get in. And that was the start.
When was this?
Oh, that's, let's see, I'll tell you that. Wait a minute. When was the League of Nations? United Nations started. 44, 43, something like that. You notice how I lapsed and said League of Nations? That's First World War.
What was there about the World Federalist that interested you?
That we would never have war again. That we would induce people to give it up. And not just give it up. We just give it up, but there's still, you know, the threads of war going. We want to go all out and have it under law. And I stuck with it. And as Mac, I used to say to Mac, you know, the roster of World Federalists sounds like who's who. It does, the national.
Did you get to meet some people who really affected you or impressed you among the World Federalists?
Well, yeah, I thought they were, you know, my husband used to say, I don't know how you can belong to that communist organization. He was a Republican. A conservative Republican. You could always tell how he voted. He'd go in and you'd hear the bell. He'd voted straight Republican ticket. Well, I wasn't like that. We didn't need a vote. We always negated each other. But he always felt I might make a mistake, I think, and his would win. Well, you asked me...
Who were some of the people involved or world figures who really impressed you, who were involved?
Well,
local people?
Wait a minute. In the World Federalist, in the national scene, he almost became run for president. He was on the Supreme Court. He just died recently, I think. Forget his name. Lose me for the moment, but I would remember.
William Douglas.
Who?
William Douglas.
That's it. You're smart.
Douglas.
That's who it was. William Douglas. I'm greatly impressed by him. And let's see who else. Who was in it? Well, in the First World War, I was impressed by Wilson. I started out early. I'm in all the archives, I really am. And where am I trying to think of the World Federalist? Well, here in town, I'll tell you this story. We were having a speaker here, and see, I did the publicity. And this man's name was, wait a minute. Heinz was the name, and this fellow's name was, what's a competitor of Heinz in beans?
Camel.
Camel. Well, let's say it was Camel. And he said, the Heinz boy went to the door, and he says, "I'm Mr. Camel, I'm the speaker." He says, "The kid said to him, I don't think you'll be very welcome here." And I always admired, he was mayor two or three times, Lawrence. I always thought he was kind of a phony as mayor, but he sat up on the platform with us once, and he was a member. And I thought that was good. You can't want me to know even important people.
People who impressed you. People you felt impressed by in the group, their ideas.
Oh, impressed me. I really don't know. They all impressed me, really. They were so bright. And you would call them down home, they'd call them First Families of Virginia. Call them WAP, whatever you want to call them. They weren't the scum of the earth, I'll tell you. And I'm always impressed by intellectual status. And one man was the head of some chemical society, another man was the...
What kind of things did you do in your group? In your organization?
In my organization?
In the World Federalist.
Well, Matt Lane, our mutual friend, he got me to do the publicity. And I did it. And I used to say, in round figures, we almost have 1,000 members, you know, I'd brag. And later on, everybody ran away from it, you know, they were afraid to be called communists. And got down to 500, 600. And we were allowed to meet in the civic club quarters. You know, it's hard to get a place. And we lost our place because I kept saying that our meetings were held there. See, I was trying to give status to us. And we lost our place. They didn't want people to know that we were used to it. Oh, it was terrible.
Was this in the 50s, you think?
Well. Now, I'm talking about World War II.
Oh, all right.
What did you say?
Okay, I wondered when the World Federalists were having this much difficulty with the public.
Well, when this movement, McCarthy, you know, that era, I guess.
That was a difficult time. What else do you remember about that period of McCarthyism?
I always remember a figure of speech that... what do you call it, the big man in radio, Fred, was it Fred? No, it's McMurray, was it McMurray? No. Well, he got up and said that MacArthur was like you picked up a thing that had scorpions on it, what do you call that?
A nest?
A what?
A nest.
You name the plant, you said it. Well, whatever. You pick up a plant and you're careful because there's things that will prick you. You have to know how to pick it up. And he used that figure of speech about McCarthy. And it really started his downfall. See, it was on television. And I can't for the moment remember the names. You know that?
Fred Murrow. Fred Murrow.
Yeah.
That was John Murrow.
Where do you get all this knowledge?
I'm talking to you here. Now tell us about what's happening, what happened in Pittsburgh particularly.
What did you say before that, who it was?
Fred Murrow, the radio commentator.
Yeah, Fred,
Edward R. Murrow.
Yeah, that's
Edward
it. Edward. I want to give him credit. He was the one who used the figure of speech, how to pick up this plant so that he didn't get stuck by it. He made the connection between McCarthy and this plant. Boy, how I hated McCarthy. You know, it's a wonder I wasn't killed in a way. You know, I always doing these things where they shoot you. They didn't think I was important enough to shoot, to waste the bullet.
Do you remember things that the Federalist Organization did in Pittsburgh particularly?
They never did anything. That's what got my goat about them. And you know that false publicity I got in that article in the paper. That's the best publicity we ever had, the nearest we ever got to any. Of course, they emphasized me, which was wrong, but at least we got in the name. I don't know why they were so idealistic.
What would you like to see an organization like the World Federalists do?
You know what I'd love to see, if I can tell you that quickly. You know that this thing over the Falklands hinges on a sovereignty of Argentine in the Falklands. And I have a dream, I'm just like Martin Luther King, I have a dream that someday we'll all join hands, all the nations, and say, that's what they did when they signed the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence. We pledge our wealth, our whatever, and our sacred honor. I like that part. We pledge all those things as to we will never have the sovereign right to make war. In a minute we could get out of all this stuff. But somehow or other, we don't swing it. But I think, you remember, I don't know what play, you're so smart, you know everything. Miss Fagan, is that right? Spelled with F-A-I, not F-A-G. I want to give you, what do you want to call it? What was I going to tell you about the sovereignty?
Something in Shakespeare that you like?
I want us, our organization, to come out with something like that. I've even offered, and I have no money. I'm trying to, keep out of debt so I don't leave anything bad on for my family to settle. I offered once to pay for the publicity, for advertising like that. But this bunch I'm with, they're so shy, they're afraid to say anything. I'm not afraid. And one of our bunch wrote this pamphlet, "He Who Knows Should Speak." Vernon Nash wrote it, I think. I'm not sure of that. And I always feel, I know I have a right to speak. And I'm always shooting off in my mouth. But, I'm nobody. Nobody listens to me. But if, Elizabeth Block, if she'd come out and say it, she gives an awful lot of money to this. She keeps it up. Really. And, she's a German refugee. Rich German refugee. And I once said to her, "Elizabeth, how can you give up all your time, all it costs you, all you do for this?" You know what she said to me? After all, she was thrown out of Germany. She says, "I couldn't live otherwise. I'm impelled to do this, stop war." It was a good answer.
I think you're impelled toward certain beliefs too. What other things have been important to you besides the World Federalist?
Besides World Federalist? Mm-hmm. Well, I lived in a small town, and you knew the man who ran for the dog catcher. In other words, you voted for the right person. I don't know what it is, living as we do. Do you know for whom to vote? You know what I do? I use the Post-Gazette, the ones they recommend. I once asked, "How do you get to those recommendations?" And they said, "Well, we sit around and discuss it and get a consensus." Well, I thought, that's the best I can do. Well, one of my longings is that somehow or other, we have an intelligent electorate. We don't. Winston Churchill said, a democracy is a terrible form of government, but we haven't been able to invent anything better. That's loosely quoted. But getting back on my sovereignty idea, I just quoted Churchill, and I said, "You're smart, you might quote this accurately." Shakespeare said, "When you have an idea and you do it right away, you push on to a result. But if you don't do it at that moment, it fades away and it is in the shoals around the shore. Who said that? I think it was one of the jesters said it. And they said smart things. Well, I feel that way about sovereignty. Right now we have the Falkland thing. And we also have Flora Lewis, who's New York Times. She wrote something about peace now. And I wrote something about peace, Martini and peace. That there is something going on, and that if we could just get to link hands, nations to link hands. Now, what do you call it? Reagan's over there, but you know about Reagan. No matter what he says, it'll be so he gets his budget that he wants. But nobody does it. You girls, Mike, will be the one. You know, you never can tell.
Are you feeling hopeful about the idea of world peace?
I feel more hopeful. And strange as it may sound, I think Mrs. Thatcher is right to give these people a chance to say we made a mistake in coming over and doing this, and we are going to accept your proposition to get out, and that you are going to pledge to work with us on the sovereignty idea. Now, you know, that's a hell of a big step forward.
Speaking of big steps forward, your family and your friends are planning a very nice project for you.
You mean that garden?
Yeah, why don't you tell
that's the biggest pony in the world, just the biggest. Would you get that little black book off of there, and I won't have to say it, in that dining room? There's a little black book. I'll tell you the gist of it.
Yeah, please.
When they were going to do this, you know, I ought never say any of my family's dangers. They pick it up and don't quote me exactly. Now, that garden you're going into. Here's how I answered it. Thanks, no thanks, I can't cope with it. It's nice, my mother said that you had the thought, and my sister has put that in her book, and I have done this for her. Editorial comment on this book. Secret is out on Lorene's lifestyle, as my sister. She absorbed all these philosophic concepts and made them as her way of life, and she's done it. That's just
is your garden going to be a kind of philosophical?
And that, now that's, put that on there, will you?
Is your garden going to be a kind of philosophical?
And now that garden, I always have things to make it long-winded, and you're the smart one. You're smart, but you let her say it. Yeah. Oh. I think it was de Maupassant who wrote it, and I'm not sure. The fellow picked up a piece of string as he was walking along, and out of that he was either imprisoned or killed, I forget. Well, that's the way of that garden. When they wanted to get put on an extravaganza for me, I said, no, plant a yellow peace rose bush at the entrance of Freehawk Hall, and let everybody see that was done to honor me. And that would be sufficient. And out of that came the garden. It's nuts, really nuts. But they say they're going to do it.
Well, while we're talking about your family, I understand you have nieces and nephews.
Yeah, these are the people who do it.
You're very close. How do you feel about that relationship with young people?
Well, I'll tell you how I've always done with young people. With little children, they're just learning to talk. I never say no. I always say yes. Well, naturally, they like me. I don't say, don't do that. I say, yes, isn't that smart? And as they got older, I always tried to be a part of their life and always tried not to bore them. Is there anything more boring than some old person telling you all the time? They haven't made so good. That's why I'm sort of for Reagan. I want to give him a chance. I didn't vote for him. But he got it. And he said, it isn't going just the way he wanted, but he thinks it's going to be, and look how long we were in. We didn't make it go. The Democrats, I voted for Carter. I voted for him again because I spent all that money educating him.
Have you talked to your young family about politics?
Young
people are involved?
You know, there's a book in there, another book. They got it all, calling it, is that the word? Together, what I said and did, God almighty, maybe I wouldn't have said some of the things, but they all seemed to think it was good.
How do you feel about young people's involvement in
the this generation? I think they're nuts.
How's that?
I don't know. According to the way I was raised, see, I'm the Victorian era, where you had inhibitions, and you were polite, and your mother told you a little Jewish child is always more honest, kinder, more studious. You have that obligation as a Jewish person. She told us that. And on our report cards, they had these high-sounding things. The pen is mightier than the sword. And that's what I was brought up on, that kind of stuff. Well, this generation isn't, I don't think, the way they do. Yeah, man, and I refuse to talk like the colored people. Yeah, man, no man. I just won't do it, even if I'm a racist, I won't do it.
You think that there's a real slipping away of proper uses of language?
Language and, what do you call it, standards. I don't think you go to a wedding barefooted, they do. They do what they damn please. I have a nephew, he goes by one of these gurus. He lives up on a mountain. He got married finally. And his family afraid to give him money, he gives it to the guru. I think, oh, that's nuts. Maybe I'm right, maybe I don't try to impose my ideas on them, but I don't accept theirs. How do you all feel? You got children? Quite well, hard to do, isn't it?
I'd love you to talk about, for a little bit if you will, some of the things you feel have been the good aspects of your life, the things you look back on as successes in your life.
No, look good now?
To you now, as you look back on
it. What I did that looks good to me now?
What you feel good about?
Well, I think I'm like the Russian intellectuals. When they took over, when Kerensky took over the Tsars, the educated people were the ones who could make the best adjustments. And I feel I'm sort of like that. I've had the privilege of education. And when these things come up, I'm able to adjust better to them. I think, I don't know. I certainly have learned in all these years that it really isn't money that counts. It's your ability to adjust with what you have. But to put the emphasis, I like to read, all right. If the television goes bad, I read. That kind of stuff. Is that what you're trying to get me to say? You believe the same thing, don't you? And you're much younger.
Are there things you'd change if you could do them over again?
Yes, I'd have social justice. You know, one of my favorite things is that today life is an organized thing to kill time. And that once we get social justice and we can't run committees to help the poor, we won't have anything to do. I really believe that'll come about someday.
Had such a long and rich life with lots of interesting things.
I have, really.
What kinds of things would you like to especially emphasize if you were younger?
You mean
you
now?
Would like to have
my idea about sovereignty. I think everybody should link hands and then link hands with their leaders and make it come true. All you have to do is stop war. Give up your right to make war. Why do you have to have a right to make war? Now everybody will say to me, well, the United States hasn't got such a clear conscience. They took Cuba for sinking of the Maine, that was the summer. Well, but some, as Truman says, the buck's got to stop somewhere. And we stop it now. All right, you can't make your sovereign right to make war. Of course, I remember this, you all remember, after World War I, Cordell Hull, I think, was the Secretary of State, and they all decided to sink all the ships and everything that made war. And we were leaders in it. Now that they were building them. I think you girls are going to have to work that one out. I won't be around.
You're particularly interested in reading.
In
reading. What writers have been especially influential in your life?
Well, I tend to enjoy financial page things and political science things that go. I feel I'm more a part of the world today when I read that stuff. And I don't have time to read fiction. I really don't. At time I read the, and I'm a good reader of the morning paper. I'm the one who reads the fine print. And I think our trouble is everybody reads the headlines. Well, that guy who wrote about me, A Martini in Peace, that's a very catchy headline. What the hell has it got to do with peace? Nothing. Except he cornered me and let me say it. Well, does that answer what you asked me?
Is there anything else you look back on with special pleasure in the
yes.
years you've described to us?
I have such respect for my father and mother. Now, neither one of them had what we call an education today. But how were they smart enough to bring up the children that they honored all these things? What did they do? I don't ever remember anybody saying no to me. No, I just don't remember. And I went to a prep school in Washington for a year, that's part of my past. And the head lady said to me, I can tell you're an only child, you're so spoiled. Well, what a six children. How can one of six children be spoiled? Well, evidently I was. Of course, that leads me to this. My mother had a, well, you'd call it a, today you call it a housekeeper. It was a maid, all work. Maggie Woodyard. She had a good Anglo-Saxon name. I always speak of her of sainted memory, all the nice things she did for me. That's what you asked me. She was so kind to me and so interested. And I always said when Maggie died, the only person who really cared about me was Maggie. She would say, look at your hands, Carrie. How can you let them look like that? You know, I've been gardening. And when she, I always ate with my father when Alfred was away over there, and she would ask me what I wanted, and I would say, stew. Maggie made it out of steak or roast beef or something. It was wonderful. She was a wonderful cook.
You talked about the influence of your parents. Do you think that parents today are playing the same kind of role as the one you remember?
I really don't know, because I don't know what role parents are playing. I do see the children. Now, we have a very interesting family in that book. My nephew married a Christian, a Congregationalist. That's the most beautiful marriage you ever knew, and the children are so wonderful. And you know, they wrote in the book, and I said to my nephew, who told the kids to write that? He says, are you being funny? He says, that's what they think. Well, for a little 10-year-old boy, if you read it, you think they're lying. Well, they say not. I don't know. They've got some sort of a, something up their sleeve. to bring up children like this. Then I have a nephew. Do you know Mrs. Marchese? She has a son whose children are sort of like that. I guess it's an individual thing. I don't think you can have a rule, do you?
Sounds like you're pretty optimistic, though. Would you describe yourself as an optimist, a realist?
I never think of myself. I always think of an optimist or a pessimist. I really don't know. I never think about it. But I tell a good one about my sister who had that book. There's two groups of people. Here's one, we're against it. Other one over here, we're for it. There's one little guy standing in the middle. He says, I can't make up my mind. I'm for both sides. Now, she's like that. But I'm not like that. I hate mediocrity. When I taught